It's Wednesday, November 18, 2020. This is the Real Vision Daily Briefing. I'm Ed Harrison, joined shortly by Tom Thornton, who's the founder of the hedge fund Telemetry. But first, with the news of the day, Jack Farland.
Thanks, Ed. The good vaccine news just keeps rolling in, with Pfizer today announcing its plans on applying for emergency approval from the FDA, quote, within a matter of days. This as Pfizer released new results indicating that their vaccine was even better than they previously thought, 95% effective rather than 90.5% effective. Pfizer's vaccine also appears to have fewer side effects than Moderna's treatment, although so far Moderna's vaccine appears to be better at managing severe cases. Despite this great vaccine news today, equities barely budged, with all three U.S. indices flat as I'm recording this at just after 2 p.m. Eastern. But the rotation into value is continuing, with money pouring into the reopening stocks, particularly those in the oil and gas sector. Since the news of the Pfizer vaccine last Monday, WTI crude is up over 12%, with energy stocks rallying even further. And this makes sense. An effective vaccine means a faster reopening, which means the sooner that oil demand will pick up. But that's just the spot price of WTI. If you actually look at the futures curve, it's flattened dramatically since Friday the 6th, with the 2030 futures being priced lower than they were since the news of the vaccine. This downward shift in WTI futures suggests that traders are bearish on oil's long-term consumption pattern after 2025. In other news, the MTA, New York City's agency for transit, warned it may have to cut over 8,000 workers from its payroll if the federal government doesn't provide $12 billion of support to fill in the gap left by plummeting ridership during the pandemic. It's a very sad announcement, and it touches on two themes. Number one, the strain that Corona puts on municipal debt. And number two, the fact that municipals need fiscal stimulus from the government in order to paper over the cracks. And then there's deflation as well. Lastly, check out Jim Grant's interview with William White today. William White is a renowned central banker at the Bank of Canada and the BIS. He's an outspoken iconoclast among his peers, a critic of Alan Greenspan's monetary policy. He called 2008. He's got some very strong views. You know, yesterday, Raoul spoke to Hugh Hendry, and Hugh kind of wants to sink the U.S. yield curve to 20,000 leagues beneath the sea. Well, William White's got some very different views. So if you want a different slice, definitely check out that interview. Again, it's part of our interview series, Paradigm Shift. And stay tuned for the interviews that are to come with Jeremy Grantham, Kyle Bass, Chamath Palihapitiya, and so many more. With that, let's go back to Ed.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Tom Thornton. And before we get into it, let me just say happy anniversary to you, because we were just talking about this off camera.
Oh, thank you. 25 years. My wife is now a saint after this 25 years.
Yeah, that is a special day. I'm only on 15 myself, so I have another 10 to go to get up to you.
Yeah, it's well worth it.
So, Tom, it's a special day for you, but for us, we want to pick your brain on the markets. That's why you're here. I was just looking at, we had a DM today, and you were telling me what your thoughts were. I think the first thing is, you know, right before we just spoke to Jack, he was talking about the markets being relatively flat today, but he taped it at 2 o'clock. And now you and I were talking at 4 after the markets just closed, and the markets were down on the back of some gloomy news.
Yeah. It's something that the market just woke up and figured out that the COVID cases are rising. De Blasio announced that they're closing the New York schools, and that really shook the market. And as the way it dropped, I like to say it dropped like wet socks on a chicken.
Yeah, I mean, what do you make of this in terms of market action? Because first we had the Moderna news, Well, let's just say we had the Pfizer news, then we had the Moderna news, and then we had the Pfizer news again, going from 90% effectiveness to 95% effectiveness. But at the same time, we're dealing with all of this COVID-19 death and hospitalization. Where's the market going to look for direction?
Well, usually the market will look forward for something that's coming in the near term. But however, this is a pandemic. We've never gone through this before. And now we have this great news with Pfizer, Moderna. I think the British study is going to come out soon. So you have all these therapies and drugs that are sounding great. Unfortunately, it's going to be a long valley to get there. So we have to go through it. Case counts are going to go up. I hope we don't go into lockdown. I think the human toll is terrible from every angle, especially, we're going to have layoffs. We're going to have economic disaster with the companies closing. And, you know, the government's going to have to come in and do something to try and, you know, shore things up. So a fiscal stimulus package is most likely going to be on the horizon and will hopefully bridge that gap. But still, it's going to be tough. And I think the market just woke up and realized what we're facing.
You know, I still can't make heads or tails of where the market is looking. Are they looking towards 6 months from now when all of this is in the rearview mirror, hopefully, or in the immediate present? The growth versus value dynamic, I think, has a lot to do with that, because, you know, people are looking at growth and stay at home as a proxy for this is going to get worse. And value for, okay, we're looking through the news, the bad news today. What's happening on the growth versus value front from your perspective?
Well, the value trade is starting to work, and specifically with financials and energy, that's starting to work real well. I did, however, trim some of my financials yesterday. I still am long a few. I like Citi. I'm long KBE, the ETF. PNC looks great. So I like that sector a lot. I am also long energy, a lot of energy right now, and it's working really, really well so far. I will hold on to the energy stocks through some of the turbulence I see with this COVID news. I think they're very, very oversold, and I think 2001 or 2021 will be a very good year for the energy sector. As far as the growth sector, the top five mega cap stocks have been 50% of all the attribution in the market over the last several years. So I do see those as being still very, very extended. And I would not be shocked to see some of those stocks, even though they're performing well from an operational standpoint, those stocks pause, and maybe pause for quite a while, maybe several quarters, maybe even a year. Some, maybe even Netflix, maybe have topped out for quite a while. So I'm really cautious on the growth area. I do see that there's going to be a lot of chop with the work from home stocks, the Pelotons, Zooms, Wayfair. Those are going to chop around, and you have a lot of shorts that are trying to get cute and short them, and they'll just get squeezed higher and chopped around. So I think it's a tough trade to try and time the work from home short right now, especially with COVID lockdowns.
Yeah, a few things that come to mind. The first, I'll just make an offhand comment about Zoom. I saw someone was saying that as soon as the New York City schools shut down, Zoom went higher, zoomed higher, if you will. Yeah. I thought that was interesting. The other thing, when you were talking about the financials, the first thing that came to mind was NPLs. I was thinking, because when you talked about Citi in particular, you know, where the NPLs are going to come doesn't seem like it's going to be the large cap banks. I mean, what are you thinking in terms of financials? Where do you want to hide in terms of who's not going to be impacted by these next few months?
Well, I think everybody's going to be impacted, but the provisions that their loss provisions that they put out in the first, second quarter and third quarter were massive. And I think the Fed asked the banks and some of the credit card companies to price in into their risk models of 13% unemployment. And here we are, I think it's under 8%. And I think it might go higher, most likely, in the next couple months. But still, I think that you have a big tailwind as the country and the world reopens after the vaccines get fully out there into the population.
Yeah. And what about the same for your energy companies? Where are you thinking, where's the place to be there?
Well, I like the drillers a lot, and they've had a really good run off the lows. And I was looking at the OIH today, and they did a reverse split on the OIH earlier this year. And it's trading around 130. And the all-time high on OIH is around 1,200 going back to 2014. So I would not be shocked to see this group move up another 100% in 2021. And I know that sounds crazy, but it certainly wouldn't even bring it back to where it was 2 years ago.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that is an amazing number, you know, how far down they've fallen in that time frame. You know, your time frame, you talk about 2021. What kind of time frame are you trading around right now? What's your thinking in terms of the horizon?
Well, I have two time horizons. I look at a daily and a weekly, short term, intermediate. So I may trade on a daily time frame up to 2 weeks, and on an intermediate time frame, it can be from, let's say, 4 weeks to 12 weeks on an intermediate time frame. So I'm looking at the financials and energy longer term. I'll trade around them and trim some and add them back on dips. But you know, certainly right now, I think that if we start to shake out a little bit more, I don't think people are really set up for that. And, you know, keep in mind, the election went a lot better than a lot of people expected. They thought there was going to be contested elections. We really haven't had a contested election, even though that, you know, there's a president that's still fighting it. So that's a real positive. The volatility has dropped back to 20. It's still, you know, relatively high for the VIX, but I think that could start to lift as well. So I'm cautious right now going into the end of the year. And also, you know, more than half of the stocks in the market are down for the year. So there's still going to be some retail tax loss selling, some funds that are going to be selling into the end of the year as well. And, you know, remember too, I was looking at retail stocks today, and the moves we've had on some of them, like Kohl's, Nordstrom's, Macy's, even Target had a great numbers. I think those are going to come in a little bit if we start to lock down again. And I think people are not spending that much money.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And, you know, when you say that, I think to other markets for confirming evidence, we were exchanging notes, and you mentioned something about bonds beginning to bounce. You were talking about gold and Bitcoin, as well as in the commodity space, coffee. Can you go through some of those and how you're looking at those particular markets?
Okay. So I was short bonds, and we recently had a backup in rates, and we stopped on the 10-year just below 1%. And we did have what I look at are DeMarc indicators, and we did have some upside exhaustion signals on the yield. So it looked like we were going to back off a little, and we did. I'm long a little bit right now in the 10-year and the 30-year. So I think that we could see, and usually the bond market to me is a better indicator of market risk. And with yields starting to fall again and bonds starting to rally, I think it was telling the bond market was telling us, look, the COVID thing's going to be here for a while. It's going to get worse. And so we already saw it in the bond market ahead of it. Next, let's talk about gold. Gold is like every asset. When markets get weak, gold will sell. people will sell anything liquid that's not nailed down. And I think gold's been sold partly because there's no stimulus right now. That's been DOA with the fiscal negotiations dying back in October. Bitcoin, well, I'm not a Bitcoin bull or bear. I have actually never traded personally Bitcoin. I kind of wish I did because the signals that I've had over the years have been really good using the DeMarc indicators. And
interesting.
Back in, was it 2017 when we peaked? Was that the last big peak or 18?
Yeah, I think it was 18.
Okay, yeah. Well,
if you were talking to Ash, he would be able to tell you.
Oh, I know. He could tell me the day. But I remember on my note that day, I put Bitcoin on. I said, look, I don't trade this. I have nothing here to prove. But we did get an upside exhaustion signal. And the next day, that was the top. And we're starting to see several on the daily that are not working. And usually when I don't see the daily working, and that's sometimes when the DeMarc indicators don't work on a shorter term basis, that means the trend is just absolutely furiously strong. And we've been seeing that for the last couple of weeks on the daily indicators on Bitcoin. Now on the weekly, we're on week 12 of 13. And 13 is the magic number of when there is an exhaustion signal. And so I think that we're coming close to a level right now that it's very extended on the RSIs, on the daily and the weekly. And so a back off in Bitcoin if overall markets get weak, because again, people will sell anything that's not nailed down in turbulence. You could see Bitcoin pull back to perhaps 12,000, 14,000 between there. And that might be a great buying opportunity. And I will say I'm more enthusiastic about Bitcoin when I see people like Michael Saylor, who I've really been a big fan of his from MicroStrategy before Bitcoin. I've seen a lot of his conversations. He's really a very brilliant guy. Then you see Jack Dorsey in Square getting involved in Bitcoin, and you see some other notable people, Paul Tudor Jones, Stan Druckenmiller mentioned it. So you're starting to see an adoption with a wider audience. Although, again, I don't have anything to prove in this. I do think it's extended just from a technical point of view and from a sentiment point of view. Whenever I see new programs get launched, I'm just kidding. It's just kidding, Raul. I'm sorry. No, it's going to be great, and I'm really very, very happy for all the people that have crushed it with Bitcoin. And there are a lot of you, and congratulations. Love seeing people make money. One thing I will say, and it's a Real Vision thing. I went to a Real Vision Blacklist event. And I met a guy there, super unassuming, nice as can be, not a finance guy. He actually was in the military. And he put, I think it was like $25,000 in Bitcoin. And he got blown up. I think it was the Mt. Gox scandal. He lost his money. And then he ended up, he had $25,000. And he took the last $30,000 he had and did it again. And he sold it at that peak in 2018, at the very peak. And he was selling it from November to December, right into that. And he told me something that was really incredible. He said the stress of watching it go up so furiously and seeing his number, he could see what he was worth, just go up, millions at a clip. He said it was so stressful. And he just felt like he had to get out. And he said, I haven't invested in anything else since. And I just found it incredible because I bet there's a lot of people right now that are feeling that stress because it's going up. It's furiously going up. And you're like, oh, my God, I don't want to lose this. I don't want to lose this. But you know something? I've always said this. Take some off on the way up when you have a profitable trade. You don't have to hit the exact high. Same thing if you're buying something when it's coming down. Take some off. lower your level of risk to so you can sleep at night and you're still going to participate. And if it goes to 100,000, you're going to be, you know, fabulously wealthy, but keep your risk in check.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, because I've heard the same advice in terms of the psychology. In order to, you know, it's really all a psychological game, making sure that you feel as if you're not risking your initial capital after you have had this win. It's incredible that, you know, it's the loss aversion that we all have starts to kick in when you're doing incredibly well in the market.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you this. I'm remembering back in 2008 and 2009 at the fund I was at, and we were short tons of financials. I think we were short well over $1 billion in financials, and we were watching all of these stocks just get obliterated, and we were making a really a great return. But it was really stressful, and it was really stressful being right and being in these and thinking, oh my God, they could turn around immediately or something can happen and we lose these gains. So I learned then with the team that I worked with, we diversified and took stuff out, or I would say we diversified, but we were diversified, but we basically were trimming on the way down. And I will say that I remember our financials team, they said, okay, cover all the Bank of America. And we had millions of shares of Bank of America short and cover Citi and all these. And they went long. And they went long in February, about 2 weeks before the true bottom. And I was very nervous at that point, but I knew that things were getting washed out. I was nervous that the companies were going to go out of business. But they did a great job and knew how to turn that corner. And I think that was important, especially since we were taking profits on the way down and lowered our risk for that. So it was... That was good risk management.
That's a great story, I have to say. That's amazing. You know, when we're talking about all of these parabolic moves, I'm thinking about Tesla, by the way, because you were talking about a gamma squeeze that's going on in Tesla today. What's happening there?
Okay, so Tesla. I'm not necessarily a big fan of Tesla. I've been short the stock. I'm short at 450 currently. It's a 1% position. It's not a, you know, game changer if it goes up. But, you know, I didn't think they were going to get into the S&P until they really showed some sort of true earnings quality. I mean, they're making their earnings from emissions credits, and that's all fine and legal, but it's really poor quality. If you took those out,
let me just say before you continue on with that, I mean, they're the largest stock to enter the S&P in history.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if they didn't enter now, and, you know, people were talking about their entering in September, and I thought at the time that it was either September or December, that they had to do it just because of the sheer size of the thing.
Yeah, I'll disagree, because I think that just because it's a large size, it shouldn't really deviate from the fundamentals and the earnings quality. You know, you have to have, is it 4 quarters of positive earnings? And yes, they've had 4 quarters of positive earnings. But if you backed out the emissions credits, which is 100% margin, by the way, that they get from Fiat Chrysler. And if you back those out, they wouldn't have made money 4 quarters in a row. And you're starting to see declines in their growth rates on their how many cars they're selling. They can't, you know, sell all the cars that they're producing in China. They have a 15,000 capacity at their new factory, but they're selling about 11,000 units per month. So I think that there's some questions there. Now, as far as with the mechanics of the S&P, okay, fine. The S&P is putting them in. A lot of people are looking at it in a similar vein as Yahoo back in November of 1999 when they were added. And I think it was about $120 billion market cap at that time. The stock went up 20% into the addition. And then that basically was the peak,
right?
All-time peak in Yahoo. And so I think that could happen. The one thing also I think might happen is that Tesla could offer stock into the inclusion. And so if they did that, they could, I don't know how many billions, it's calculated. They might do it in two tranches. But if they did, they raised $10 billion in the offering where they're offering stock and it gets in the print at the very end of the day on the rebalance, then, you know, that would salvage their, you know, problems with insolvency, with cash levels, you know, percentage of capital market cap being so low. So I think that that would, you know, basically change the narrative to more of what is happening, which I think is a demand issue. Coming very soon in Q1 are the VW ID.4s, which look great. They're very common basic cars, but they're electric. And the European market, I think it's grown year over year almost 100%. And with that, Tesla, before that big surge, Tesla used to be around 30% of the market in Europe, and they've lost market share. Now they're just around 15%, maybe even lower. So with all the new EVs coming out, Tesla is selling fewer as a percentage, and maybe it's due to them not having a factory. Maybe it's due to the taxes that are happening there. But see, I think that they're coming up against some really formidable competition. And the German manufacturing with Volkswagen building a great platform, which is going to be like a skateboard with all their operating, you know, mechanicals, and then Audis, VWs, they probably have Porsches right. on there yeah. as well, will go on there. And it really will be a game changer as far as how manufacturing goes, and it'll save money so those companies don't have to build their own platform. So I think it's going to be a really a big game changer. BMW has a few new models coming out. Mercedes already has some out. They're not penetrating the U.S. They're not sending them to the U.S. yet because they're really focused on the European market because it's doing a lot better. And I also think that, you know, Tesla's trying to, you know, open up all these factories. And now if I was a short, which I am, I will say, please open more factories, spend more money on factories because the demand is not necessarily there. And if you build it, it doesn't mean that they're going to come and buy more cars. The problem for Tesla also is that they keep lowering prices. If demand is stable, you don't lower prices. It just doesn't make economic sense. So I think they have an underlying demand problem, and the stock will continue to do its thing until it becomes very evident that that demand is just not there.
Well, you know, as you say that, it reminds me of the Jim Chanos interview. I don't know if you saw that In Conversation with Mike Green that yeah. came out earlier in the week. He had some very interesting things to say about how he thinks about being short within the context of an overall portfolio. How are you thinking about this position? Because you started out saying, you know, this is a small position. How do you think about being short as a percentage or a portion of your portfolio?
I think I've been short Tesla 15 times over the last 4 years. And I've made money 11 out of 15 times. The last go, I lost a lot. And I lost more than I wanted to. And it was really poor risk management. But despite all that, I size my positions appropriately. I'm either 1% if I'm a starter position. There's times where I can take it up to 5%. And there's sometimes where I'll take it to 10%. That's rare. And the way I look at it is if I'm, you know, if I have a sized right position and I know it's one of these stocks that can go against me really quick with, you know, if somebody goes out, you know, the million calls were bought today in Tesla, jamming the stock up. I know that can happen. So I'll keep it sized right. And, you know, when it went down, it was basically cut in half a year ago or year and a half ago, I think. And I absolutely crushed it then. And I will say that was like just, you know, fabulous. But the last time I did it, I lost money. And now I'm short at 450. It's going against me. I'm not necessarily that worried because I know this catalyst going into the S&P is a one-time event. And it doesn't mean that it's going to be, you know, something that you're going to have another $20 billion of demand for the stock. And one other thing, I look at short interest religiously. Tesla's short interest is so low right now. There are no shorts in this stock. It's a gamma squeeze. It's not a short squeeze. The days to cover in Tesla is at 0.62 days to cover. That is so low. And I think it's just, you have all these shorts that have just said, okay, you know what? Pack my bag. I'm out. You win longs. Congratulations. We'll play it another day. Now, when the stock starts to roll over, you'll have those shorts come back. It's never going to be just one straight down move. It'll be just a chop fest all the way down to where it builds into its true valuation. And I think it's trading at about 1,000 times earnings right now with those emissions credits. So emission credits go away next year. The demand with more competition is going to be tough. So I think it's, you know, we'll have our time. We know when to strike, and there'll be the right day. And, you know, certainly I think it's a very tough stock. The hardest short I've ever seen. And I know everybody else watching will say, yeah, it's the hardest short because it doesn't freaking work.
Well, you know, Tommy, since we're running out of time, I want to ask you a few other questions here, because on Twitter, you asked people what we should talk about. And there are a few things that I think are interesting. I was looking at the chart of DXY earlier today, and you, the dollar against the euro. And it looks to me like the dollar's breaking down. The levels that we see are the lowest that we've seen since the June timeframe. It's almost to the level that it was in the last breakdown that we've had. What do you think is going on with the U.S. dollar, and how does that reflect in terms of your trading patterns?
Okay. This is actually very timely. Thank you for bringing this up. The DXY and the Bloomberg U.S. dollar index, which is what I look at, and it's a blend of currencies with the dollar. It's on day 12 of 13 with a downside DeMarc sequential buy countdown. And to me, that is a exhaustion signal. And when you get that, you can basically look at it and say, okay, here's an opportunity based on this indicator that I can take a contrary position and have a stop underneath it if I'm wrong. But the odds are that we most likely will see a turn in the US dollar. And I think the dollar will go up if the S&P and other markets start to weaken. I think that'll be something that we can watch happen. So I'm actually, I'm long a little bit dollar euro. And I think that could turn. And another thing is, look at the way the yen has acted. It continues to strengthen, and it's in a really pronounced trend. So I thought we could see the yen weaken about a week and a half ago, and it did for a few days, and then it just right back into the trend. So that's something I'm watching as well, because I think that you've had a lot of people talk about the 25-year breakout in the Nikkei. Now, Raul used to send on GMI way back a chart of the Nikkei and the U.S. 10-year yield. And he said, look, this is correlated. So when you had yields going down, the Nikkei was going down. And it's not always a perfect correlation, but I think you saw yields drop yesterday, and the Nikkei dropped a percent yesterday as well. So keep an eye on that. I think it's just an interesting correlation that I learned from Raul, I think, well over 10 years ago when he was writing GMI, and something to watch. I should ping him on that one.
Excellent. Well, Tommy, it has been a pleasure talking to you. I hope that you have a good night with family. And, let's talk again about Tesla in due course.
Great to see you. Thanks so much.